Bobby Altman, go ahead and raise your hand. You can also go to the website, LakeviewChurchOfChrist.org, and pull one of those offline and follow along that way if you would like. As I've told you before, the elders and I sometimes get together. We usually get together before the beginning of a year and sort of they give some ideas and some direction and what type of topics they would like us to talk about for the next year as we're together. And I was looking over the list of the things that we had talked about last year, and I started realizing, I don't know that they realized this yet, there's a lot that they want covered in one year. I mean, there's just a lot of different topics that we wanted to talk about and cover this year. And so what I'm going to be able to do this year, week, with this quarter actually, what I'm going to try to do is merge some of those ideas together and talk about them this quarter. Because there are three different things that I want to sort of merge together and talk about this quarter. And that is, one, service to our physical families. That is the theme of this quarter, is how we can serve our physical families. Last quarter we talked about how we can serve our spiritual families. Now we're going to talk about how we can serve our physical families. On my sheet of paper of the notes I took, one of the things that we were wanting to talk about is the different roles that members of the family play. All right, so we got two family things going here, so we can go with that, right? And then the third thing that we were wanted to deal with is a little bit about cultural rot in our society. What are some things that are influencing us in a negative way? We've talked some about that already this year and various ideas and topics. We're going to continue to talk about that. But one thing that Satan has really successfully been able to accomplish to hurt our society, to hurt our country, is to change or diminish or in some way shift how a family should operate. So many things he's shooting at us to try to get us to think about families in an unbiblical way, a way God doesn't want us to view families. And so we're going to add some of that in there as well. That part of it we're going to hit the very end because I didn't think of this brilliant plan until after the outline was already printed up. So we're going to add that at the end. So don't think when we get done with the outline, we're totally done. We have a few more things we're going to talk about. And we're going to mention some things in general about how society has changed the way that children are supposed to act and respond and participate in the family that has really hurt the way that our culture and our society operates and runs. We're glad everyone's here this morning. If you're visiting with us, we're glad that you're here. What we're going to do is we're going to open up God's book. And we're going to find out what God says about a child's role in the family and how a child can serve the family. Now, all the ideas cannot come from up here. Obviously, they're all going to come from the Scripture, but the practical ideas and suggestions that we have to offer, we want your participation. There's so much value out there. We want you to participate. And one of the ways we want you to participate is the board in the back. I've changed it over this morning. The board in the back is how you can serve your physical family. And so if you have an idea on how children can serve in the physical family, maybe it's just a very practical thing of going to bed on time, getting up in the morning without having to cause your parents to come to your room multiple times. Whatever it is you want to put on that board on how a child, how a kid can help serve his physical family or her physical family, you put it up there. Everybody, please take time to read that board as hopefully it will be changing as the quarter goes. Get too much on there, we'll just take a picture of it and erase it and start all over. Your input is valuable in how this congregation runs. Gordon mentioned in his talk before Lord's Supper, but we're all in this together. Right? We all want to go to the same place. Right? And so your participation in helping one another is just as vital as the lessons that I present from up here. So let's go ahead and start with point number one. Is children serve the family? Well, I forgot to mention my 3 points. They serve the family by submitting to their parents, by obeying, and then we're going to look at some examples of that in the Old Testament. So children serve the physical family by submitting to their parents. Luke chapter 2. Remember the story. Jesus has gone down to Jerusalem for the Passover with his family. They're finished. They leave. They're traveling in a caravan. And so they are an entire day's journey away from Jerusalem when they realize Jesus is not with them. They go around to all the other groups in this caravan asking, is Jesus with you? No, Jesus is not with us. We haven't seen him. We haven't seen him since we left Jerusalem. So it says that they were very anxious about this. At least that's what Mary tells Jesus when she finds him. And so you imagine that day's journey back, wondering where Jesus is. You get there. When they get to Jerusalem, it says it takes them another day to find Jesus. So 3 complete days before they find Jesus, and they find him in the temple. In the temple, he's talking to the scholars of the day, and he's asking them questions, and he's answering their questions. They're amazed at what Jesus, how he's able to know the scriptures and be so wise at this point. Okay, so he is amazing the religious scholars of the day. Mary and Joseph find him. Mary rebukes him. Why have you done this to us? We've been very anxious about this. Jesus says, you should know I should be about my Father's business. But look at this. This Jesus, God's Son. Now there's a lot of you children in the audience this morning that think you are wiser and smarter than your parents. You're not. Jesus, on the other hand, was. He's just been talking to these scholars and baffling their minds about how smart this kid is, right? He is God's son. He is wise, knowledgeable, knows more than Mary knows more than Joseph knows. But let's look at what Luke chapter 2 and verse 51 says. Then he went down with them and came to Nazareth and was subject to them. But his mother kept all these things in her heart, and Jesus increased in wisdom and stature and in favor with God and men. At the age of 12, Jesus was subject to his parents. He was subject to his parents that multiple times throughout his growing up years, he knew better than they knew. But yet he still obeyed and did what they asked him to do. Jesus did chores. Jesus would go out and help his dad build things from trees he created. Jesus did not smart off to his parents. He respected them. If God's son, this wise, smart boy who was baffling the scholars of the day, could be subject to his parents, don't you think children, of all of you children in here today, can serve your physical families by being subject to your parents? And you wonder why Jesus did that. Maybe Jesus did that because that is one of the big temptations of growing up, is to be rebellious. To think you know more than your parents, to be smart alecks, to go your own direction. And yet you can look at the example of Jesus, who could be tempted in all areas, yet we are, had to understand that, had to recognize and realize that he put himself in a position where he was subject to his earthly parents. And he did that partly so that you could look to his example and say, if Jesus can do that, I can do that with my parents. This is the law that Jesus lived under, Deuteronomy chapter 21 and verse 18. Rebellion from children has always been something that God has not wanted. It is one of the quickest ways to just destroy a family, where children are allowed to do what they want and they are allowed to rebel against the orders and the commands and the laws of their parents. Deuteronomy 21 and verse 18. It says, if a man has a stubborn and rebellious son who will not obey the voice of his father or the voice of his mother, and who, when they have chastened him, will not heed them. So you have parents who are doing what they know to do. They're chastening him, right? The chastening is there. And if you go to the book of Proverbs, we find out that a lot of times that happens with corporal punishment, right? The chastening is there. They're at their wits' end. They've done all they know to do. Then his father and his mother shall take hold of them and bring them out to the elders of the city, to the gate of the city. And they shall say to the elders of the city, the son of ours is stubborn and rebellious. He will not obey our voice. He is a glutton and a drunkard. Then all the men of the city shall stone him to death with stones. So you shall put away the evil from among you, and all Israel shall hear and fear. So under the old law, a stubborn and rebellious child was to be stoned to death by all the men of the city. Why was that? Because rebellious children destroy families, even as they get older. Right, this is a glutton and a drunkard. You're not talking about a four-year-old, right? You're not talking about a four-year-old here. You're talking about someone who's up in age. That destroys that family for generations to come. Exodus chapter 21 and verse 15 says, "And he who strikes his father or his mother shall surely be put to death." Leviticus chapter 20 and verse 9 says, "For everyone who curses his father or his mother shall surely be put to death. He has cursed his father or his mother, his blood shall be upon him." In other words, you have capital punishment. In our society, we leave capital punishment. I'm not advocating capital punishment for these offenses by any means. But we reserve it only for those who take lives, right? God, in order to establish a society that was going to be successful and was going to be able to do what He wanted that society to do, you cannot tolerate disrespectful, stubborn children. If you do tolerate disrespectful, stubborn children, chaos is going to result. And remember what God said when they were entering the land: if you do what I tell you to do, if you follow my laws, all these people are going to look at you and they're going to say, "What a wise bunch of people. These guys are smart." And that their success was predicated on that. And so God says, if you don't do what I tell you to, they're going to look at you and say, "Look at the chaos running wild in those families. Look at that mess." And so you got to take care of the problem as it happens. And He says, that child is responsible for his own death. Sometimes we like to blame our parents for everything. These are parents who have done what they needed to do. They've tried their best. They've chastened him, and he will not listen. Those of you who have been around kids, know kids, have your own kids, you recognize that some kids are different. And some kids are hard to get to do what you want them to do, even with all the chastening that is there. Proverbs chapter 30 and verse 17. "The eye that mocks his father and scorns obedience to his mother, the ravens of the valley will pick it out, and the young eagles will eat it." It is wrong to verbally disrespect your parents. It is wrong to non-verbally disrespect your parents. How many ways of non-verbal disrespect can you think about? Stomping away, slamming the doors, rolling the eyes, turning your back to, interrupting. All those can be non-verbal ways of being disrespectful to your parents. Obviously, it is wrong to physically abuse your parents. And it is wrong to mock or disobey your parents. Those are all things that we find in the Old Testament. Let's look at a couple passages from the New Testament. We're not going to read the Ephesians 5 passage, but we are going to read the Colossians 3 passage. We're going to start, though, in 2 Timothy chapter 3 and verse 1. 2 Timothy chapter 3 and verse 1. Remember, we've read, and I have it noted here, Romans 1 and verse 20 later on. We've read Romans 1 several times in the last couple of weeks, so we're not going to read it again. But in that long list of things that are wrong, unmerciful, unloving, those who had given themselves up to sexual passions which God did not want them to engage in that was those who are disobedient to their parents. In this list, 2 Timothy chapter 3 and verse 1, But know this, that in the last days, perilous times will come. For men will be lovers of themselves, lovers of money, boasters, proud, blasphemers, disobedient to parents, unthankful, unholy, unloving, unforgiving, slanderers, without self-control, brutal, despisers of good, traitors, headstrong, haughty, lovers of pleasure rather than lovers of God, having a form of godliness but denying its power, and from such people turn away. That's a pretty egregious list that those are pretty bad people. Those who are without self-control, those who are brutal, those who are headstrong or haughty, or those who love pleasure more than they love God. Right in the midst of that particular group of people, lumped in with them, are those who do not obey their parents. And the Holy Spirit told Paul to write to Timothy, turn away from people who are disobedient to their parents. I tell you, advice to young folks. If you have friends who don't obey their parents, stop hanging out with them. They're not good for you. Turn away from them, just like he says here, just like you would encourage your child to turn away from a headstrong person, or turn away from someone who loves money, or someone who loves themselves. Turn away from people who will not obey their own parents. Colossians chapter 3 and verse 20. Children, obey your parents in all things. We know the Ephesians passage says, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. And it gives that this is the first commandment with promise, that you may live long on the earth. For this is well-pleasing to the Lord. It is pleasing to the Lord, well-pleasing to the Lord, for children to obey their parents. It's important. It's vital in a society, in a family, for everyone to recognize that the parents have the responsibility. We'll talk about parents later. But children have a responsibility to submit themselves to their parents, to do what their parents tell them to do, to obey. Anything other than that is total chaos. Now, those of us with kids, even those of you, maybe if your kids are out of the house, how many of you would say that a great way for your kids to serve in the family, to make the family run smoother and better, and the way God would want it to be, is for your children to obey you? Anybody think that's a good thing? Anybody think that's a good act of service a child can do from the very beginning? Do what your parents tell you to do. That's great. That's from God. And from a practical standpoint, all of us, I think most of us, not all of our parents, the parents in the room that says that, yes, that would help the family. That would help the family operate better. That is a great way that you can serve the family. The second point we're going to talk about is children can serve the family by listening to the instructions of their family. This is different than obeying. Because there's some things you tell your kids to do, but then there's advice that you give your kids that is designed to help them throughout their entire lives. And this point is extremely significant, because this point will affect your family for generations to come. Some of you kids in the audience have already started going down a path that is not good. You've already started walking down a path of being disrespectful to your parents, or thinking you know more than your parents, and refusing to listen to their guidance and counsel. You are not only affecting negatively your immediate family now, you are hurting your family for generations to come. You are negatively affecting your children at the age of 13, 14, 15 right now. If you're not listening to and incorporating the advice of your parents now, you are hurting your kids and your grandkids and your great-grandkids. You are hurting and doing a disservice to your future spouse. God expects children to listen to their parents. Proverbs chapter 1. We're going to be in Proverbs a lot. Proverbs chapter 1 and verse 7. How does a man become wise? The first step is to trust and reverence the Lord. Only fools refuse to be taught. Listen to your father and mother. What you learn from them will stand you in good stead. It will gain you many honors. What you learn from your parents will help you. People will honor you years to come if you listen to the advice of your parents now. How many of you wish you listened to your parents a little bit more when you were younger growing up? A few of you? How many of your parents told you to do well in school? Study and work hard and do well in school? How many of your parents told you not to do that? No, nobody? Nobody grew up with a parent that said, just slack off, kids. Don't do your work. Doesn't matter. How many of you wish you would have done better in school? Anybody? All right, a few of us wish we'd done better in school. How many of you wish you would have done worse in school? Anybody? I imagine there probably are some people that study too hard and they look back at it and they messed out on experiences, whatever the case may be. But I think it's pretty silly to think that most people are going to look back and think, man, I just regret getting good grades. I mean, it was just the worst advice my parents gave me is to work hard and get good grades. It was awful. I just regret doing that. No. But there's a lot of us that live with at least a little regret. You wish you were a little bit harder, got a little bit better grades, learned a little bit more. It's very important because that advice that your parents is giving you is going to stand you in good stead. It's going to give you many honors. Proverbs 6 and verse 20. My son, keep your father's command and do not forsake the law of your mother. Bind them continually upon your heart. Tie them around your neck. When you roam, they will lead you. When you sleep, they will keep you. And when you awake, they will speak to you. A family is peaceful when kids listen to the instructions of their parents. The life of a child who listens to the teachings of his parents will be much more enjoyable, not only now, but for years to come. Proverbs chapter 3 and verse 1 says, my son, do not forget my teaching, but keep my commands in your heart, for they will prolong your life many years and bring you a prosperous life or bring you prosperity. The child who listens to the teaching of his or her parents will have a longer and more prosperous life. How many of you want a shorter and less prosperous life? I mean, unfortunately, there are silly kids that will raise their hand to that question. All right, they're thinking it right now. I wish I'd raised my hand to that question. I want a less prosperous life. And that's just the way kids think. Remember that lesson that we did not too long ago about your brain is not fully developed till you're 25 years old? That's one reason why you need to listen to your folks. Most of your folks are over 25, all right? So listen to them. They don't know all the answers. They've learned a lot through life, but they know that the Bible has the answers. A foolish man puts no value on his father's training, but he who has respect for his teaching has good sense. You are foolish if you don't value what your parents are teaching you. You are not serving the family. You are disrupting it. Proverbs 10 and verse 1 says, a wise son makes a glad father, but a foolish son is a sorrow to his mother. A wise child makes his parents happy, a foolish child does nothing but bring sorrow. What are you doing for your parents? Are you making them happy? Or are you causing them sorrow? You can serve your parents while you're serving yourself, while you're serving God, while you're serving the generations in your family that are yet to be born, if you just listen to the instructions of your parents and do what they tell you to do. Quit causing your parents sorrow and listen to what they say. Well, there's a couple examples of this, and we're going to start at the end and sort of work our way back on these examples. Judges chapter 16 and verse 21. This is Samson. Then the Philistines took him and put his eyes out and brought him down to Gaza. They bound him with bronze fetters, and he became a grinder in the prison. However, the hair of his head began to grow again after it had been shaven. Now just think about this for a second. Samson had his eyes plucked out. He was tied up. He was a grinder in the prison. He ended up dying along with the Philistines. And you think, well, that's terrible. That's awful. You think Samson brought his parents to light? You think Samson is someone who you would look at and say, yes, his life, this is the way he wanted his life to end. This is all good. This is all great. This is all perfect. Now, I understand in Samson's life, there was divine intervention. There were some reasons why some of this stuff happened. But you think, why did he end up here? If I asked you that question, you'd say, well, he ended up there because he married this evil lady named Delilah. And Delilah was greedy. And because she was greedy, she was able to work a deal out with the Philistines to figure out the power behind Samson's strength. And once she figured that out, they cut all his hair off. That's why Samson ended up where he ended up. Well, we all know that Delilah was not Samson's first wife. Delilah was Samson's second wife. Now, he married Delilah because his first father-in-law ended up giving away his first wife to his best man. And there's a whole bunch of good little cool stories in there that we won't have a chance to talk about. But why did he marry the first woman? Judges chapter 14 and verse 1. Now Samson went down to Timnah and saw a woman in Timnah, the daughters of the Philistines. So he went up and told his father and mother, saying, I have seen a woman in Timnah, the daughters of the Philistines. Now therefore get her for me as a wife. Then his father and his mother said to him, is there no woman among the daughters of the brethren of your brethren or among all my people that you must go and get a wife from the uncircumcised Philistines? Now, we know this is of God. God has some ideas and some purposes for him. But think about this for a second. Samson's first recorded misstep was his refusal to listen to the advice of his parents. And that's critical, young folks, because you think that, you know, I can make all these decisions and they're not going to have any effect, and I can make different decisions later and all this stuff. When you make decisions, you are bound to the consequences of those decisions forever. And what might seem like a pretty small idea, this woman's beautiful, this is the one I want to marry. And your folks say, marry somebody from your own people. And he says, no, get her for me. The whole road does not have to be traveled if he listens to the counsel and the advice of his folks. Second example is with Eli. That was our reading this morning. Came from this. It's not going to read that part of it, but it came from this. But in 1 Samuel chapter 2 and verse 22. Now Eli was very old, and he heard everything his sons did in all Israel and how they lay with the women who assembled at the door of the tabernacle of meeting. So he said to them, why do you do such things? For I hear of the evil dealings from all the people. No, my sons, for it is not a good report that I hear. You make the Lord's people transgress. If one man sins against another, God will judge him. But if a man sins against the Lord, who will intercede for him? See, Eli saw his kids doing something wrong. He verbally tried to stop them. If the kids listened at this point, they could have turned their way. Now we know Eli bears some responsibility for this, for sure, right? In the reading that was already read and some other places, Eli is held responsible for not forcing his children to do the right thing. Because he had the power to over them because of the way that the system worked. 1 Samuel chapter 3 and verse 11, and the Lord said to Samuel, this is after he's already told Eli that in the reading. He already told Eli what's going to happen. Because you've done this, you've let your kids do this, and your kids have not listened to you, and you haven't stopped all this, here's what's going to happen to your family. That was in the reading. And the Lord said to Samuel, behold, I will do something in Israel at which both ears of everyone who hears it will tingle. In that day I will perform against Eli all that I have spoken concerning his house from beginning to end. That was our reading. For I have told him that I will judge his house forever for the iniquity which he knows, because his sins made themselves vile and he did not restrain them. And therefore I have sworn to the house of Eli that the iniquity of Eli's house shall not be atoned for by sacrifice or by offering. His whole family was judged forever because his sons did not listen to him. And he did not force them to stop their sinning. Now there's sometimes where your kids don't listen to you. Even as they get up in age, if you have the power to stop them from that, you got to stop them. If you have the ability to stop them from doing stuff, you know about it, and they're doing it, and you can stop them, and you don't stop them, that falls partly on you. Now, if they had listened to him, then the whole thing would have been avoided. 1 Samuel chapter 4 and verse 17. So the messengers answered and said, this is after the battle had already taken place. Israel has fled before the Philistines, and there has been a great slaughter among the people. Also, your two sons, Hophni and Phinehas, are dead, and the Ark of God has been captured. Then it happened when he made mention of the Ark of God that Eli fell off his seat backward by the side gate, and his neck was broken, and he died. For the man was old and heavy, and he had judged Israel for 40 years. So Eli's sons died in battle. The ark was carried away in captivity. Eli died, and the children of Israel fled before the Philistines, all because Eli's sons would not listen to him when he told them to stop doing what they were doing, and he did not override their bad decision not to listen to him and force them to do what was right. Children need to obey their parents. They need to listen to their parents and make sure that they refrain. And parents need to make sure that they refrain their children from doing evil. A lot of practical things there. Please fill the board up for me. Do your chores. All right. Your parents tell you to do something. Do it. Do it before they have to tell you multiple times. Volunteer to do things that's not your responsibility. Don't argue. Don't fuss. Don't fight. All that good stuff. I want you to fill up the board. Let's look at how this has affected our cultural rot, though, before we leave. The family is foundational in having a structured, organized, successful society. As the family goes, so goes the rest of society, right? If the family isn't strong, society's a mess. If the family is strong, society's going to be a lot better off. So what are some things that are taking place in our society and have been taking place in our society that is causing America, if you will, to not be as strong as it once was? Well, let me give you some suggestions. One, we're allowing the kids to make too many of their own rules. And you look at, you know, some of these examples we looked at, these weren't young kids, were they? They were drunkards and gluttons, and Eli's sons were older, and Samson was getting married. These were older folks. It is a shame and an embarrassment on what's taking place in college campuses today. I mean, they have turned college campuses over to the kids, and the kids are just being foolish. And you read in the paper and you follow it on the news, the kids are making bad mistakes and no one's there to restrain them. No one is there to say, that's ridiculous, that's silly, that shouldn't happen. For some reason, we have lost in our culture God-given authority for parents and older folks to stand up to younger folks and say, you're wrong, You're causing a mess. You're ruining everything. This is foolishness. Stop it right now. We've forgotten how to do that. We've lost it. We are valuing the opinions of children too much. Now, I'm not opposed, you know, we need to listen to our kids. We need to consider our kids always in making decisions. We can get their input in making decisions, but they're kids. They don't always know the right thing. And they have to be told why those, you're making these decisions and why these decisions are good for the family. But we, at a, too young of an age, you can't let them make up their own mind all the time. The non-discipline movement in our country has really hurt us, especially the non-corporal punishment idea that started. How many of you were raised where getting a SWAT in school was a real possibility? Just sort of look around at the age there, okay? It was a real possibility. All right, now, how many of you actually got a SWAT in school? All right, this... How many of you think your SWAT in school ruined you for life and you've never recovered? Gene, okay. Couple more. Chances are it didn't kill you, right? It didn't kill you, you're here. It didn't hurt you. It might have made you better. And just the thought that you might get a SWAT helped tremendously. And the realization that if you got a SWAT in school, you were going to get 10 times worse at home helped you too. Now, how many of you in the audience were getting at SWATs in school was something that had stopped by the time you were going through school? Okay, so you notice the age there. The younger folks, that even wasn't a they didn't have to fear that. And just a little personal thing, that happened at the end of my growing up years. There was a marked difference. My sister is 4 years younger than me. There is a marked difference between the discipline and the thought of discipline in the kids in my age and older and her age and younger. I mean, those of you who are a little bit older, would you ever think to call Child Protective Services on your folks? I mean, the thought would never cross your mind. You didn't even know Child Protective Services existed, right? You didn't. And yet later there became this culture where the government has stepped in and in some ways good, right? We don't deny that. I mean, the abuse is bad. Overspanking is bad. Physical, where it turns from discipline to abuse, definitely is not what God intends, right? But there's something about forsaking discipline that has had a huge negative impact on our culture. I was reading an article, and it was the person who wrote the article was talking about, you know, we really need to bring spanking back. We need to bring spanking back because quick punishment for wrongdoings and it's over with. The punishment's been put out. That's more in line of what she thought was good. Now, I will warn you this. A lot of times we have a tendency of thinking how we were raised. One or two things. Either let's go the opposite extreme, or hey, I turned out okay, so the way I was raised must be fine. And that's not our guide either, right? But this person was trying to, a person that they were quoting in the article was trying to say there was a better way to raise children than spanking them. I want you to see if you notice something in this, though. When my wife was pregnant with our first child, we sought out books like How to Talk So Kids Will Listen and Listen So Kids Will Talk that followed the path first blazed by Benjamin Spock and Barry Brazelton, mass-marketed child care guides, along with popular shows like ABC's Supernanny, which is praised in the most prestigious art magazines about raising kids. Those things offered an immersive curriculum on disciplining children without hitting them. Without realizing it, we zeroed in on a style of parenting that sociologist Annette LaRue calls concerted cultivation. All right, so we have this whole thing, concerted cultivation, listening to your kids, talking to your kids, listening. And those aren't bad in and of themselves. Don't get me wrong. What's the major thing, though, wrong with that quote when I first read it, and I hope you picked on it too. Where's God's view on all that? It didn't say they consulted what God said. As we looked at what all these men said, we had available to us all these great resources from all these brilliant people, and that helped us formulate a better way of parenting than hitting your children. Well, really? We're going to go to Super Nanny? She's going to be our authority in how to raise kids? I'm not saying she doesn't have any good ideas or things don't work sometimes. But God has the answers. God will have the answers to how families ought to run until the world ends. There'll be no better guide. No man will figure it out apart from what God says. You agree with that? No man will figure it out better than what God has figured it out. God's ways are always the best ways. We need to stand firm in what God says in the way that we parent and the way that we child. Children need to respect their parents, listen to the guidance of their parents, and they need to obey their parents. And that is a great way to serve your parents. If there's anyone here today that is not submitted to the Father above, God, through the blood of His Son, by being washed in that blood, immersed in water to have your sins forgiven, you can do that. If you're a Christian, you realize your life's not going the direction that you should, and sin is a reason of that, you can make that right. If we can help you get closer to God and closer to Jesus Christ, we ask you to come as we stand and sing.